podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
With the international break done and dusted, it's back to the Premier League on this edition of the Punt podcast. When will Palace win a game? When will Palace score a goal? We'll speak to the Daily Mirror's David McDonnell about the special markets on the Eagles and, of course, talk about the big game at Anfield this weekend. We'll also dip our toes into the gene pool. Would Scotland be world beaters with taller players? Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski and Al Ross will give you their best bets domestically, while Sam Norris will pick out his best bet in Europe. But first, on the back of winning naps, the godfather of betting, Derek McGovern, and William Hill's in-play football product manager, Andy Excel, join myself, Dave Keller, here in the studio. Andy, you'll be unaware of your winning nap, but Lee Phelps stepped into the breach last weekend and amazingly picked a winning nap for you.
Countermanded my manager's instruction not to give out any winners. I'll have to have a word with him.
Derek, well done on your winning nap as well.
Yes, sir. Come on, don't just say winning nap. Give the price as well. Iceland, 16-5, 3-0 away from home at Turkey. That's what you call a nap.
If only they were as easy every week, Derek.
Bring back international football. Stop this Premier League nonsense.
Anfield first up this weekend for a big one. It's Liverpool versus Manchester United. Liverpool 17-10, the draw 9-4, Manchester United 8-5. So barely a cigarette paper between them as far as the betting is concerned. Enhanced odds. Mohamed Salah to score and Liverpool to win was 17-5. That's now 4-1. If you fancy Marcus Rashford to score and Manchester United to win, it was 19-5. That's been enhanced to 5-1. Liverpool, actually, Derek, without a win in 6 Premier League games against Manchester United. That's their worst run since a spell in the mid-noughties when they went 8 without a win. And Man U have actually won 3 of their last 5 Premier League visits to Anfield as well. This is an intense rivalry, but one that recently Manchester United have had the better of, Derek.
Well, they have, but I don't see that happening this weekend. There's a couple of reasons for that. But the odds, I'm surprised United are just marginal favourites. Those odds, what, would you say 17-10 Liverpool and 8-5 United? Bookies are saying with those odds that they don't have a clue who will win. Well, I'm saying welcome to my world. You know what? I think Liverpool's best option is to stack their midfield with parking wardens, because you know exactly what Mourinho's going to do. He'll do exactly what he did last season. He'll go there and park a fleet of tanks and ask Liverpool to break them down. And Liverpool, as we've seen against worse opposition than United, struggle when that happens. I mean, 1 win in 7 games, I think it is, for Liverpool, which is, you know, a terrible run. You know, it was a season I promised so much with that 4-0 hiding of Arsenal. But it's unravelling now. And that begs one obvious question, Dave. Just how bad are Arsenal? Liverpool looked world beaters that day. I hate this game. You know what? When this game comes to town, when I go, whether I'm watching it on TV or at Anfield, it's 90 minutes of sickness. And if we lose to United, it's not so much the feeling you get when you wake to find a dead mouse in the mousetrap. It's more the feeling you get when you wake to find a not-quite-dead mouse there. It's gut-wrenching to lose to United. But I don't think they will. I don't think they will. I think the draw is an absolute nailed-on bet here. You see, Liverpool are in such a... Jurgen Klopp normally goes for the win, but they're in such a bad run now that he will feel a draw against one of the top opponents is a decent result. Mourinho will obviously think it's a decent result because that's his MO. You know, Liverpool, it wasn't long ago we were all talking about Liverpool's record against the big 6 clubs. Now, everyone seems to have forgotten that now just because they got hammered 5-0 by Man City. 5-0, by the way, with only 10 men, and they were a better team for the first half hour. So don't write Liverpool off just yet. But I just think a draw at the biggest, comfortably the biggest odds looks the very, a very, very likely outcome.
Derek going with a draw. I think team news is vitally important here as well. Sadio Mane is missing for Liverpool. Their win rate in the Premier League plummets from 63% when Mane starts to just 42% when he's absent. And Marouane Fellaini, I never thought I'd say this about a Manchester United side, but Mourinho has instilled his faith in Fellaini throughout the season, and he's missing for this game, Andy, as well. So a couple of pieces of important team news.
Well, before the internationals were played this week, I thought United should be favourite for the game. And then Fellaini got injured, and I thought I might swing the other way. And then Mane got injured, and thought I'm definitely back with United now. You're right, Fellaini's an important player for him. He just fits what they do with the physicality aspect, because he is just a head on a stick for me. but with Mane out, I can't see United not winning. I just really can't. I think you've got one team in good form and one team in not good form, and I just can only go with one.
I noticed there as well he had a little pop at you, your Arsenal team, Andy. Welcome back to the podcast. McGovern's already getting stuck into you after 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'm impervious.
Can I just ask you boys a question about this? You know when you read that, it's pertinent to this game. You know when Fergie talks about knocking Liverpool off their perch? Now, do you think he did that? Do you think Fergie knocked Liverpool off their perch?
Yeah, I think he did, didn't he?
Did he? Go on, and why? Why did he knock Liverpool off their perch?
Well, because I suppose, I don't think he completely succeeded, because you would say in Liverpool, when their absolute pomp going back to my childhood, back in prehistoric times, were dominant in Europe, and Fergie almost got them there, but certainly domestically he did for a while before all the Premiership money and money from the Middle East came flooding in.
Well, he didn't, you see. That's the thing. Because to say that, if you were to say that Fergie knocked Liverpool off their perch, you would suggest then that when Fergie won his first title with United in 92-93, Liverpool had won it the previous few seasons, and then Fergie comes along, wins the title, and that's the end of the Liverpool domination. That's what you would think. That's what it would imply, wouldn't it? Wrong. That year when United won the title, Liverpool finished sixth. Okay, fair enough. The season before, they also finished sixth, Liverpool. Leeds won the title. The season before that, Arsenal won the title. It's actually more accurate to say Arsenal and Leeds knocked Liverpool off their perch. Even Sheffield Wednesday, because they finished third when Liverpool finished sixth. So all this knocking Liverpool off their perch, it's yet another line that trades out of Fergie's big gob.
You're never going to give Fergie credit for anything, are you, Derek?
Ever. You certainly got knocked off the perch. I'm thinking dead parrot sketch here.
No doubt about that. We knocked off the perch. But it wasn't Fergie in United that did it. In fact, I tell you who it was. It was another Scot, Graeme Souness, who was manager of Liverpool at the time they fell off their perch.
Does that make you feel better, Derek, that it wasn't Ferguson?
Yeah, it does. It really gets it off my chest now.
20 years and he's still not got it off his chest.
And not got over it. Watford versus Arsenal next. The Watford 4-1 to win this game. Saturday 5:30. The draw 16-5 with Arsenal at 8-13. Arsenal to win both halves was 14-5. That's been enhanced to 7-2. And both teams to score in the first half was 100-30. That's been enhanced to 4-1. This is a hashtag your odds game. So if you want your bet on the William Hill website and on the app, do tweet using the hashtag your odds to @WilliamHill. And Andy, we commented at the start of the season about how reticent we were to back Watford to go down because of one man, that man, Marco Silva. And he's done an incredible job in the opening parts of the season. This is their best ever start to a Premier League campaign, even though they haven't won at home yet.
No, he's doing a brilliant job as forecast, really. But they're very close to each other in the league table. And I'm actually a bit relieved from a few weeks back that it's not in 17th and 15th, respectively. But you know, I mean, Arsenal's form has picked up, but I don't think they've found the answer yet. I still think they're vulnerable to going on another downward turn. And this game worries me because it's a bit in US terms how they term a trap fixture. You expect a team to win and then they don't. I think they'll probably just get home here, but there'll be goals in the game. There's been 23 goals in Watford 7 games and 19 goals in Arsenal 7 games, which averages 3 goals a game if you combine the two. There's also been 3 goals in each of the last few games. So I just think there'll be goals, but I think Arsenal 2-1 is the sort of thing I'm looking at.
That's 7-1. If you like Arsenal to win and both teams to score, which could be another angle in here, that's in the market at 2-1. I think Watford, Derek, are set up to perform better away from home than they are at home. They've got some real pace on the counter-attack, and I'm not surprised they've got a better away record than at home so far this season.
You do get a few teams like that. I think Everton will be another of those teams this season. But in a way, this is almost going to be like an away game for them, because Arsenal will have most of the ball, so they will be having to counter-attack anyway. I think it actually falls into Watford's hands, this one. Watford won 2-1 at Arsenal in January. Remember that? It was the most ridiculous result of last season, apart from the punts getting the win and treble up. Watford had gone 7 games without a win in the run-up to that. I think we've gone 7 seasons, Dave, and we were out of win. But 7 games... And
I can't remember the winner, Derek, actually.
I remember viewing that fixture, and I thought, you know what, I don't rate Arsenal, but there's not a prayer of Watford getting anything out of this. And they won 2-1, and deservedly so as well. I think they're overpriced again, Watford here. I just think Arsenal are a team I'm going to be opposing all the time. I know Andy doesn't agree with this because he's an Arsenal fan, but Wenger, he's getting a bit of stick from his fans now. But he gets such an easy ride from the press. You can't believe how the press never turns on. They're turning on Jurgen Klopp already. They turned on, you know, Rafa Benitez never got a fair press. Wenger's been 23 years of kindness from them. It's ridiculous. Now we're talking for Arsenal. This is how bad it is for Arsenal now. We're talking about Jack Wilshere not possibly being the answer for them. He spent half of the last 2 years sidelined by injury, and a more depressing half of it sidelined by Bournemouth. And all of a sudden, he's back on England's radar as well. It is ridiculous. He's not up to it. Doesn't cut the mustard. Watford will win this. I think they're overpriced, and I'll be babbing a few bob on them.
4-1, Watford to win the game. Andy, any retort?
Any retort? I think Jack Wilshere should be in the England starting lineup.
Jesus. Nicky Butt with Twitter. That's all Jack Wilshere is.
When you've got no midfield players who can play an incisive pass, that's the one thing he can do. You would have to build a team around him, which is a scary prospect considering his injury past. But I think since I saw him age 15 making his debut against Barnet in a pre-season friendly, and he was the best player on the pitch that day.
And that would have been our best player on the pitch against Barnet.
Well, Dennis Bergkamp was in the game.
Oh, well, I'll give you that one.
but yeah, I've always been a Wilshere fan, and I think he's a seriously good player, and England need that sort of player.
You can tweet me at D Kellner, and I will relay those tweets next week on the podcast if you've got any response to Andy Excel believing that England should build their team around Jack Wilshere. We'll get some interesting tweets, I think.
It will. The only people who agree with him will be Scotland fans.
Why is that? Because he's 5'6".
Hopefully we can get a little bit closer with the European nap this week. 2 Italian heavyweights go head-to-head on Saturday night when Napoli travel to Roma, and preference has got to be for the away side here. Napoli have made a formidable start to their Serie A campaign, achieving maximum points from their 7 league games so far. They haven't lost a Serie A game of any description since February, and you have to go back to October last year for their last away day defeat in the league. That was against Juventus, and they'll travel to Roma absolutely brimming with confidence. The home side also made a good start to the league campaign, with the only blot on their copybook being a 3-1 defeat to Inter. They've won their other 5 matches, and this looks set to be a cracker. With a fancy for Napoli to get the win here, I can also see plenty of goals. No one has scored more goals than Napoli this season, with a league-high 25 goals notched already, and Roma are no slouches in front of goal either. In fact, Roma's games this season have averaged exactly 3 goals a game, whilst Napoli's is a whopping 4.29. This brings in over 2.5 goals into the equation, and I'm going to combine those two outcomes this week and go for a Napoli win with over 2.5 goals in the game at a tasty 2-1. Good luck with your bets across Europe this week.
Southampton versus Newcastle next. Southampton 17-20. The draw 5-2. Newcastle 100-30. Enhanced odds, Manolo Gabbiadini to score and Southampton to win was 19-10, enhanced to 5-2. And Yosselu to score and Newcastle to win was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 8-1. Derek, Southampton underpriced again here. The early stats tell the tale as far as Southampton are concerned. They failed to score in 8 of their last 9 home Premier League matches.
That's it. That sound you hear in the background is Dave Kellner licking his lips, the Newcastle's odds there. Because you've opposed Southampton all the time, and I'm pretty sure you will do again, and I will. I mean, Newcastle are good things here. As you say, Southampton played 5 matches at home this season. They failed to score in 4 of them. And their opponents included Swansea, Wolves and Watford. And their odds on to beat Newcastle. Okay, Newcastle are no great shakes, But he showed enough against against Liverpool in their last match to suggest they're well capable of beating Saints, who, to me, don't seem to have a plan. I mean, it was all rosy talk about them when he'd got rid of Puel and got this new manager in. But at least you could see what they were about under the previous gaffer. This one, I don't see any pattern from them. I don't see any confidence. Newcastle fall under my radar. 3-1 away from home against a team who are beatable. I have to go for the away team here.
Andy?
I'm more flip-flops than on the beach here. I don't really know what to do with this game. Southampton, the form in the last six games between the two teams is 4 wins, Southampton 2 draws. But they've, like Derek says, their home form's awful. I don't like them. I don't really like Newcastle away from home either, so it's which to pick, really. At the prices, I probably would say Newcastle, but I keep, like, 1 minute I'm saying Southampton, 1 minute I'm saying Newcastle, so I really don't know on this game, is the honest answer.
130 Newcastle to win the match is Derek's pick. A couple of stats in the build-up to this game as well that have been doing the rounds. Newcastle have taken just 5 points from the last 42 available on the road in the Premier League, but that win that they've had in that spell did come at Swansea last month, and Benitez has the youngest starting lineup in the Premier League, or has averaged the youngest starting lineup in the Premier League so far this season. So Southampton, Newcastle 17-20, the Saints the draw 5-2, Newcastle 100-30. And the weekend finishes on Monday night, 8 p.m. kickoff, Leicester versus West Brom. Even money, Leicester City, the draw 12-5, West Brom 14-5. Enhanced odds, Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win was 19-10, that's 5-2. And Jay Rodriguez to score and West Brom to win was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 8-1. That Craig Shakespeare effect has worn out, Andy. They've won just once in their last 10 Premier League matches now under Shakespeare. This after winning 7 of their first 10 with him in charge. And Leicester are seriously struggling.
I just don't think anybody's talking about how bad they are. We're top price as far as last time I looked on Leicester, and rightly so. I think they've, since the opera singer appeared on the pitch at the end of the season, they've gone from Don Giovanni to Tusker. If that's a bit highbrow, get your Google out. I wouldn't back Leicester with counterfeit. I just can't see them. It's a game set up for West Brom to just do what Pulis does and grind out a win. Mm. And I don't see anything else happening. I think once that happens, then everybody might start talking about just how bad Leicester are.
Interestingly, both these teams have gone 5 without a win in the Premier League. But it's a good point that Andy makes about Tony Pulis maybe setting up and going there with optimism, because they're actually unbeaten in their last 7 away games at Leicester City, West Brom. So they'll go there with a bit of confidence, Derek.
Yeah, that is an incredible record, that, because, OK, some of those years were when Leicester were absolutely useless, but they went there the season Leicester were beating everybody when they won the title and drew 2-2. They won there 2-1 last season. 3 seasons ago, they won there again. 2 wins and a draw in the last 3, and you know, they're playing a Leicester side who are abysmal right now. I've just been looking down at Leicester's squad, and I'm thinking, that's a tidy-looking squad, that.
Yeah. Well,
OK, they've lost Drinkwater and they've lost Kante. But that's still a tidy squad. They should be doing an awful lot more. And you think, is the manager the problem? Or are the players resting on their laurels of 2 seasons ago? 14-5 West Brom, given those stats and the way the Foxes are playing, yeah, I've got to go for an away win here. Some big prices on the Coupon this weekend.
I think there's one mitigating factor here, and that's this being a Monday night match. I think that makes it looks different to me with it being a Monday night under the lights at the King Power. Fans are always really behind their team, and I expect Riyad Mahrez to have a major impact, because when he knows the TV cameras are there and the in inverted commas, the world is watching, I think that's when he plays his best stuff.
It's a possibility, but I just don't see him. I'm really got a downer on him at the moment, and it annoys me that people aren't even talking how bad they are. Because they should be.
It comes around as often as Halley's Comet, a Derek McGovern winning nap. Iceland to win at 16-5. Bosh! 32 quid back. The William Hill team picked up 30 quid with draw half-time, England full-time at 3-1. Gav's draw no bet on Shrewsbury gave him his stake back, and Pete's tactic of not putting a nap in at all paid dividends by not losing for the first time in 3 weeks. DK sits at the top of the table with £40 profit. Al Ross is second on -3, and Derek McGovern moves into third on -£12. Good luck, everyone.
We might need it. We might need it. And Lee Phelps, very humble there as well with his winning selection for the, in inverted commas, the trading team. Didn't mention himself there, but Phelps, he came up with a good winning nap, Derek.
Yeah, he did. He did the but he didn't say what it was, did he? What was the winner again?
Yeah, it was the draw England, draw half time England full time in the
they
first
don't count. Of, first yeah, of two qualifiers.
You never go with the supporting markets, do you, Derek?
Proper naps you need. Like Iceland. Don't ask me for mine now.
Yeah, what is your nap this week?
Well, you know what? I looked at the other fixtures in the Premier League other than the ones we've spoken about. And nothing appeals as much as the ones we've spoken about. I think Liverpool-Man United is a nailed-on draw. And I think Watford are overpriced at 4-1 to win at Arsenal. But I just like the look of Newcastle at 10-3 to win at Southampton. Southampton are a team to oppose right now.
130, Newcastle for Derek.
I'm going to make Derek stay here. Man United.
Oh, Manchester United away from home against Liverpool. Big sigh in the background. 8-5 Manchester United to win that game. Listen, I disagree with both of you chaps. I'm going Leicester at even money to win this week. I'm glad you've gone top price as well, Andy, which bumps up the treble. I think Leicester under the lights, 8 p.m. kickoff on a Monday night. Mahrez and Vardy will have big games. Leicester at even money, my nap. So that treble this week, Newcastle 100-30, Manchester United 8-5, Leicester even money, pays 21-1 here with William Hill.
The Premier League hashtag Savaka is back at William Hill on Twitter. Nearly got the international Savaka right last week. 4 out of 5. Wales let me down unbelievably for my Savaka to come in. So this week's hashtag Savaka is Chelsea to win at Crystal Palace, Burnley to beat West Ham, Manchester City to beat Stoke, Spurs to beat Bournemouth, and finally, Arsenal to win at Watford. Hashtag Savaka on Twitter at William Hill.
Now, it's fantastic to be joined on the line by the official Football Writers Association guest this week. It's the Daily Mirror's Manchester football correspondent, David McDonnell, who joins myself and Derek on the line. Good afternoon to you, David.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Good
well?
Good afternoon, Derek. I'm good, thanks. I'm very well, yes. Looking forward to Premier League resuming after international break. It's always good when the Premier League's back. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I think everyone feels that way, actually, with with the way England are playing at the moment. And I want to start by just reflecting on the internationals momentarily and start with genetics. And if you weren't aware of what Gordon Strachan said after Scotland were knocked out of the World Cup or knocked out of going to the World Cup in Russia after being held by Slovenia in their final group game, this is what Strachan said in his press conference.
What I do know, and you'll have to start thinking about this before you start, genetically, we're behind. We're in the last campaign, we were the second smallest, apart from Spain. So that means we have to pick a team tonight that kind of try and combat the height and strength. Even at that, we couldn't combat their height and strength at set plays. So genetically, we have to work at things. I don't know, we get big women and men together, see what we can do. But it is a problem for us because we have to fight harder for every ball and jump higher than anybody else because it's easier for these kind of guys. Nobody tell me their technique, apart from one player, is better than any of ours. But physically, the teams we've found over the last couple of years, physically we have a problem with that. But we seem to be able to fight it and battle it and get through just on sheer determination, skill and work rate. And that takes a lot out of you. And that's what's happened tonight, that these guys have put so much into this that is I really do feel for them. But they can also, as I said to you, they can be really pleased with themselves.
David, I don't know where to start with that. It's difficult. I think my favourite quote was, maybe we get big women and men together and see what we can do. I think that was the highlight of that, I think.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the most politically correct statement from Gordon. No, I mean, look, 10 out of 10 for originality and wackiness. I think you'd you probably have to go back to Fergie blaming the grey shirts for Man United being 3-0 down at Southampton for a more bizarre excuse. Look, I mean, as Gordon said there, you know, they are the second smallest team. There's no disputing the facts. But you know, when you look at the fact that Spain are you know, in the last campaign with the smallest team and look at the success they've had, then your argument really falls down there. You know, I mean, height has never been an issue. It certainly was an issue for Scottish players in the past. You look at the likes of Archie Gemmell, you know, diminutive. Kenny Dalglish, I think, was, what is he, 5'7", 5'8", you know, and formidable striker, you know, for Liverpool and for Scotland and Celtic, obviously. So, you know, I don't think that argument holds up. I think Strachan made some errors in the campaign. I think, you know, it's been well documented that he didn't start Lee Griffiths in the first three games. And, of course, you know, once he came into the side, I think he scored four goals and provided a few assists, and they went on that five-game unbeaten run. So I think really you have to look a little bit closer to home and stop blaming, you know, issues, you know, sort of beyond his control, because ultimately he's the man responsible. Mm. And there were kind of, you know, frequent errors in selection and in terms of, you know, poor defending, certainly in the last game against Slovenia, that ultimately cost Scotland the chance of that playoff spot.
And Derek, on the back of something like that, Twitter is a fun place to be. And one of my favourite tweets on the back of that press conference came from at NUFC Threat Level. They tweeted, Stoke City are missing out on a fortune here by not sending Peter Crouch out to stud in Scotland, which I really liked. Genetics in football, Derek. I mean, you had ambitions of being a top-level footballer, and you're not very big, are you, Derek?
No, that was my problem. I wasn't big enough, you see. I'd probably be in a Scotland international. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. Scotland's not the 11 short arses they've got in the team isn't the problem. It's the smart arse they've got managing it. Excuses taken to a ridiculous level. If the Scots were ever in a gene pool, they'd all drown by the listening to Strachan. It's just ridiculous. I mean, why didn't Peter Crouch score a million goals then? You know, Scotland didn't do too well when Duncan Ferguson was playing. He's about 11'2". When Willie Young was playing, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And the problem with Scotland is that, in fact, I heard someone say the other day, it was harder to get out of Gordon Strachan's squad than to get into it. He persevered with players who were badly out of form. And didn't anybody laugh in the press conference when he said, we've got the second smallest squad, you know, statistics show, just behind Spain? I mean, that's a great punchline, isn't it? Just behind Spain. The whole place should have fallen apart. We'd laugh at it. The guy, words fail me.
Spain won the Euros, by the way, in 2008 and 2012. They won the World Cup in 2010. And anyone know Lionel Messi? He's 5'7" tall as well.
Well, another thing he said, by the way, that's even more depressing when he's going about being too small. He said every player's technique is the same apart from one player, i.e. Messi. So was he saying there's no difference between the million players in international football? You know, they're all the same level. How depressing is that if an international manager thinks that?
Let's move on to the Premier League, chaps. And I want to start with Crystal Palace here because they haven't scored since Mother's Day. I'm not sure what exactly they did to their mothers that day to deserve this. But we've got a couple of special markets here with William Hill on the website. When will Crystal Palace get their first point in the Premier League? Newcastle away is favourite at 5-4. Chelsea this weekend, 15-8. West Ham at home, 5-2. None of those games listed is 6-1. When will they score their first goal in the Premier League? Chelsea again, this weekend, is actually favourite at 5-6. Newcastle away 7-4. West Ham at home 5-1. And none of those games listed is 12-1. Have they got the personnel or the manager to survive, David? It's been a baptism of fire for Roy Hodgson. They've had away dates at both Manchester clubs in which they've been resoundingly beaten. And then they've got this home game against Chelsea this weekend. As Manchester football correspondent, you'll have seen a bit of Palace recently.
Yeah, I mean, being based, as you say, Dave, up here in Manchester, I've had the pleasure, or that should probably be displeasure, of watching Palace the last couple of weeks at City and United. And in fairness to them, against City, yeah, they kept them at bay for, 44 minutes and played quite well, if I'm honest. They hit the post, I think Loftus-Cheek hit the post. And yeah, they kind of acquitted themselves pretty well. But then, of course, once they went behind, they kind of down tools, and it was just a surrender after that. And it was a similar story at Manchester United. Of course, they conceded early on that occasion and went down 4-0 then. So, you have to say it doesn't look like there's any way back for Palace and Roy Hodgson, really. I mean, you know, they've got Chelsea up next. You know, they haven't scored. They haven't got a point. You can't see where the goals are coming from. And they've got decent players, you know, but they're missing the likes of Benteke, who's injured. Zaha's out, obviously. I think Loftus-Cheek, I don't think he can play against Chelsea because he's on loan. I think it was a similar situation with Fosu-Mensah at United. Now, I'm not saying that had those two been able to play, that the results would have been different. But you do fear for Palace because they just don't seem to be able to get themselves out of this rut. And, of course, the longer it goes on, you know, the harder it is to get out of. Now, they've got a run, I think, in December, just up to Christmas, a run of what you would think were winnable games against the kind of teams around them. You know, the likes of Brighton, West Brom, Bournemouth, Watford, I think, and Swansea. So, really, I think their fate will be sealed by December. If they can't get, you know, by Christmas, if they can't get themselves on the board, you know, with a few points by then, I think they're down.
Derek, is there anything in those two markets I mentioned that looks attractive to you?
Yeah, none of the no wins in 6-1 the first one you said, no wins in those three or four games you mentioned, because have they got the players to stay up? Yes, they have. They stayed up last season under Big Sam, and you look at that squad, and there are worse squads in the Premier League than that. Their problem is the man who's replaced Frank de Boer, Roy Hodgson. Roy Hodgson couldn't inspire me to take a dump if I'd spent the night before on Guinness and curry. What is that man doing in the Premier League? I mean, I remember what he did. He turned Liverpool into the kind of club shown last on Match of the Day, even when they're not playing West Brom. And the kind of thing, the kind of club Fergie says nice things about. He was a disaster for Liverpool, a disaster for England. And the man should be drummed out of football. They've got no chance of staying up with that man in charge.
Let's finish with a chat about the Manchester clubs, because as I mentioned a few moments ago, David is the Mirror's Manchester football correspondent. Which game are you at, first of all, this weekend? Take it's Liverpool.
I'm at Man City v Stoke this weekend, but I'll certainly be getting there early to watch Liverpool United, because, you know, it's a standout game in English football. You know, I mean, it's got, I think, one of the biggest televised audiences, I think. I think it had 700 million for the last one. I think El Clasico had 500 million, you know, worldwide. So it's a huge game. You know, even though Liverpool haven't been, you know, winning the title for 20-odd years, they're still United's biggest rivals. It's still got the biggest history, the biggest passion. And it's going to be a fascinating, you know, contest. I mean, you know, last year United went there with a typical Mourinho game plan of parking the bus. You know, they're in a bad place. You know, they hadn't had the best of starts. And he couldn't afford to lose that game. I think it'll be a similar situation, you know, on Saturday Anfield. I think Mourinho will go there, be compact, you know, organised, not give too much away, and try and hit Liverpool on the counter attack. You know, conversely, Liverpool are great going forward, but they can't defend at the moment. So it's going to be a difficult one to call. You know, Liverpool really, you know, they've had their best of starts in the league, you know, and certainly in the Champions League as well. You know, drawing the game, so. Yeah, you know, they need a decent result, and they're missing Sadio Mane, and that's a big loss for them. Mm. But Coutinho's obviously come back into the frame. So yeah, it's going to be a fascinating encounter.
What do you, if you had to make a prediction?
I mean, a draw would be sitting on the fence, but I think Liverpool have got an opportunity there. With United, without Fellaini, who's a massive loss to United in terms of the height and the physical threat, the aerial threat he poses. Pogba's out, of course, as well. So, and Herrera will probably come in alongside Nemanja Matic, and Herrera's, I think, only started one game for United in the Premier League this season. So, I think it's there for Liverpool. You know, they're at home. You know, they've got the great Anfield crowd behind them. You know, it's a question of, you know, how much in the mood Lukaku is as well, and Rashford. You know, with that pace that they've got, and maybe if Martial starts, you know, they could really get Liverpool's offence. But I think a draw would be. I know it's sitting on the fence, but I think that's what I'd probably go for.
9-4, the draw in that game, and as you mentioned, Man City taking on Stoke this weekend at the Etihad, and Manchester City long odds on to win this game at 2-13. David, have you been impressed with the way Manchester City have performed so far this season?
Yeah, I'm hugely impressed. You know, they beat Liverpool 5-0. Okay, that was aided by the Mane red card for the incident with Edison, but. You know, they seem to have got to grips with Guardiola's philosophy this season. I think Edison as well, you know, he obviously was out, you know, he got forced off in that game against Liverpool. But, I mean, you know, last season they had a calamity keeper in Bravo. You know, it was a real liability rather than asset. But this season, Edison's come in, has given them stability at the back. You've got, you know, De Bruyne putting his thing, Silva as well in midfield. Kyle Walker's come in and hit the ground running as well. I just think they look a much more solid unit. Stones is impressed as well. You know, he had a difficult time in his first season, and of course Aguero, you know, he's out with his broken rib, but he's on his way back. I thought the performance against Chelsea was outstanding. I mean, it was a 1-0 win, but I mean, you know, if you look at that result, that result, the scoreline kind of masks just how dominant City were in that game. I think that was a real, you know, sit up and take notice that City are sort of, you know, champions in waiting, if you like. I think they're going to be the team to beat this season, certainly.
Hello, my name's Pete Farries, and for my nap this week, I'm going to take Ipswich. I'm only kidding. I'm going to have Sheffield Wednesday to beat Bolton and do it comfortably as well. Bolton haven't scored in their last five games in all competitions. Lost 2-0, 3-0, 3-0, 2-0, and then last time out, 1-0 to Villa. Things don't really seem to be improving for Bolton. And while Sheffield Wednesday's away form is always the issue under Carlos Carvajal, I don't see how at 10-11 they're not value. But I'm chasing an in-form Al Ross, and I'm definitely chasing an in-form and increasingly cocky Dave Kelner down. So I'm going to go for a bit of a bigger price here and take Sheffield Wednesday minus a goal at 5-2. The goal-scoring threats that Sheffield Wednesday pose are incredible, and four of the last five losses their opponents Bolton have had have come minus a goal. So Sheffield Wednesday minus one at 5-2 is my nap of the week from the Championship. Let's hear from Gav Pochalowski on League One.
Gappy with a croaky voice looking ahead to League One this weekend. Two teams caught my eye, both teams on the travels. Shrewsbury away at Plymouth. Shrewsbury are evened. I think that's by name only. Top away at bottom, so that's very tempting. But I'm going for the side who are 23-20 to win away at a side who are struggling. The away side are scoring plenty, and the home side they're up against have failed to score in three of four home games. I'm taking Bradford at 23-20 to win away at Bury. For the investment made by Bury, the players they brought in, they should not be outside the relegation zone in mid-October by goal difference. They're 20th at the moment. Their aim definitely should be top six minimum. But Bury struggling at home and up against the Bradford City side who have scored in every single away game so far this season, and they've started to score masses of goals as well. Three away at Walsall, three away at Peterborough, two away at Oxford, and four last time out away at MK Dons. They did win just by a solitary goal at Northampton, but Bradford scoring over 1.5 and 2.5 goals themselves away from home. So Bradford to score a couple of goals, Bradford and over 2.5 goals, very much a play. But my nap selection in League One is Bradford at 23-20 at Bury. Now looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Even after a few weird sets of results a few weeks ago, things are starting to settle down in League Two, and that gives me confidence to return to one of the three regular staple bets that was so good at making profits in the first weeks of the season. Lincoln City at home, 17-20. Tasty pricing at the best of times. Visiting Cambridge are not having the best of times. I'm not much of a head-to-head backer, but it's been a home win in the last four times and six of the last seven times these teams have met. The main reason for backing it, though, here is a complete list of the teams that have won at Lincoln in the last 12 months. Mansfield. That's it. Now, Lincoln were in the conference last year, or the National League if you're a slave to marketing, but they've already got 11 home points this season, which is a decent return anyway, but they've had to host title favourites Mansfield, my title favourites Luton, and last year's playoff semi-finalists Carlisle, so it's not a bad return at all. And overall, in good form. Last three games, home and away, two wins and a draw. Last 10 games, six wins, two draws, two defeats. And it's Cambridge who are in town. Captain Leon Legg will be suspended after last week sending off in a 3-1 home defeat by Wickham, their fourth defeat in five. If you listen to the manager, they're just unlucky. If you read the stats, last week they conceded 17 shots, 9 on target. That's not just bad luck, that's just bad. If you include a penalty shootout defeat to Northampton in the EFL Trophy, it's 6 defeats in 8 away from the Abbey Stadium this season. This week's nap is a simple Lincoln to win at 17-20.
That's your lot then for the Punt Podcast this week. Do check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app. Thank you to everyone that contributed and, of course, to you for listening. I do hope you've enjoyed it. You can follow myself on Twitter at dkellner and make sure you follow at William Hill for the latest enhancements and the offers throughout the course of the weekend. And if you're having a bet, the very best of luck. Until next time, goodbye.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.